When you read a book, it's often divided into chapters. And if we were to read the book of Genesis in the original divisions, the chapters wouldn't be the chapters that we have. There would be each section beginning in a certain way. And the way that each section began is found in chapter 11 and verse 27. These are the generations of. This is what became of. This is what happened to. And the section that we're in is a section that began at chapter 11 and verse 27, which says, these are the generations of Terah. Now, we might think this is the Abram section, but the scriptures call it the Terah section. And they call it the Terah section because we're tracing, we're charting what happened to the three branches of Terah's family. Now, remember, Terah had three sons. He had Haran, who died in Ur of the Chaldees. And who was his son? It was Lot. So Lot is continuing down the Haran line. Then there was Nahor. And what happened to Nahor? Well, Nahor went out, didn't he, with Terah. He went out, he followed the Fertile Crescent, followed the rivers up to Haran, and he dwelt there and he stayed there. So the Nahor branch is the branch of the halfway obedient, who just stayed there in Haran. Children, grandchildren, granddaughter Rebecca, great-grandchildren, Laban, Leah, Rachel. That's the Nahor branch. But this morning, we're looking at what became of the two branches that had got down into Canaan. Terah had died in Haran. Nahor had stayed in Haran. And the branch, one branch is Lot and one branch is Abram. What became of them? What became of them in the land? And this passage, Genesis 13, speaks about the difference between two believers. We think Lot is a believer. He's called a righteous man in 2 Peter. But he's a very weak believer. What's the difference? Abraham walked by faith, and Lot walked by sight. And that's what we have set before us this morning. And we have to ask ourselves the question as we look at this passage, which says, what's become of Terah? What's become of these two branches? Am I someone who is walking by faith, or am I walking by sight? Well, let's look at the negative first as this passage presents it to us, which is walking by sight, and we're thinking about Lot. Now, you might say, how can I say that Lot is a believer? I mean, you read Genesis. If you read Genesis, you'd be struggling, wouldn't you, to call Lot a believer? He left Ur. That's kind of like positive. He then left Haran. That's positive. But after that, it's not looking too good, is it? But just turn with me for a minute to 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 7. It says of God that he rescued righteous Lot, greatly distressed by the sensual conduct of the wicked, for as that righteous man lived among them day by day, he was tormenting his righteous soul over their lawless deeds that he saw and heard. So it's saying that he's righteous, he knew God, and he knew the difference between right and wrong, and he was distressed by wrong. So Lot is a believer. But what's got him in this place where he's in turmoil of soul? Because that's not where the believer should be. That's not the normative pattern of the believer, is it? God doesn't want us to be in permanent distress. We've been singing a version of Psalm 23 where he talks as he restores our soul. He leads us in green pastures beside still waters. That's God's purpose for the believer. It's not his constant state, but the constant state shouldn't be constant turmoil. The constant turmoil was because of a choice of Lot. And we see the choice here. So Abraham and Lot have come back out of Egypt, and it says in verse 5, we're back in Genesis 13, Lot who went with Abraham also had flocks and herds and tents, so that the land could not support both of them dwelling together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. At that time, the Canaanites and the Perizzites were dwelling in the land. Now you might say, what's this strife going to be over? Well, you've got flocks. What do you need to get them? You need to get them water. We know that Abram was a well digger. You see that later on in Genesis. Genesis 26:18 talks about Isaac digging again the wells that his father Abram had dug. He wanted water. And Lot is thinking at a human level. The Canaanites and Perizzites are in the land. They've followed the water. And so far, Lot's been doing okay for water. Think about where Lot comes from. He comes from Ur. Where was Ur? Mesopotamia. What's Mesopotamia? The land in the middle of the two rivers, the Euphrates and the Tigris. Lots of water. That's not bad. You follow the Fertile Crescent, you follow the rivers round to Haran. What do you still find? Water. You go in the land for a while, but quickly go into Egypt, where you've got the river Nile. Lots of water. And so Lot's now back in the promised land with Abram, but he's got one thing on his mind. Water. Water means prosperity. But the Canaanites and Perizzites know that as well, and they're just heading for that. And we see Lot's choice. He gets a choice there, and we see the choice he gets. When Abram gives him a choice, which way does he want to go? And in verse 10 it says, Lot lifted up his eyes, and he saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered. Everywhere, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. I've just seen the Nile. Wow. This is the closest that Canaan gets to the Nile. Hasn't got like a major river, not got the Euphrates on the Nile, but it's got the Jordan. Wow. He saw, and then he chose, verse 11, all the Jordan Valley. I'll have it all, please. Thanks, Abraham. I'm taking the water. You can have what's left. So he sees with his eyes, he's walking by sight, he chose, and then he separated from Abraham. Again, verse 11, they separated from each other. And Lot, then he settled among the cities. He moves his tent as far as Sodom. And by Genesis 14 and 12, verse 12, he then is dwelling in Sodom. So he has followed, just like Eve. What did Eve do in the Garden of Eden? She saw that the fruit looked nice. And it was all downhill from there. Lot sees what looks best from a human standpoint, walking by sight. I want the water. What does it mean? He separates from the only man in the line of promise, Abraham. Separates from him. He goes towards the cities. He settles in the cities. It's an absolute disaster. The choice of Lot, he is thinking simply on a human level. And let's just pause for a minute and just think about what a great calamity this choice is. What did Lot fail to do? We can see very, very clearly what he did. It makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? It makes sense in planning your life. You just look, what's the best place to go? We'll go there. But what's the first thing that Lot's done? Well, there's been a failure to seek God. Nowhere in this text where it says that Abraham built an altar and called on the name of the Lord does it say that Lot called on the name of the Lord. He doesn't call on the name of the Lord with Lot, just as Abraham called on the name of the Lord. There's no sense of coming to God and the love of God for who he is. There's no sense of Lot coming and saying, well, I'm not sure, I've been enough at worship, I'm not very close to the Lord now, I can't make this decision, Abraham, can we just put this decision off for a bit? I can't make this decision now, I need to seek God. Can I come to the altar, Abraham, with you at Bethel? Can we call on the name of the Lord together? Not even seeking God as a decision maker, because sometimes we can kind of be going down our lives and suddenly decisions we're making, we're kind of coming to God as kind of like the advice bureau. Abraham, in calling on the name of the Lord, is seeking God for who he is. There's been a failure to seek God. And that raises the question to us, are we those who seek God, who call upon the name of the Lord. That's New Testament language as well. Whoever calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. But there's obviously too a failure to seek God's will. So Lot's there, he's up, he's in this more mountainous territory around Bethel, so that the pasture is not quite as good. And as he looks down to the Jordan Valley, you don't hear Lot saying, "Oh, Abraham, can you just tell me, does that fall within the promised land? Where's the exact bounds of the promised lands? What is that the place where we're supposed to be?" Does he say to Abraham, "Abraham, what did God say? What did he say to you? Tell me what was the revelation? Whoever blesses you, I will bless." So is Lot saying, "Abraham, I've got to be close to you. The God's revealed will says, whoever blesses you, I will bless. Abraham, what can I do to help you? In fact, Abraham, I shouldn't be choosing first, Abraham. You should be choosing first, because God has said, whoever blesses you, I will bless." Lot is not thinking like that at all. He's just thinking about, what I see is what I want. And if I want it, I'm going to get it. And when we're seeking to make decisions, usually, in God's revealed will, there's a very plain choice to be made. So sometimes we want a kind of a special, God to kind of almost give us some special inner sense and revelation. But God's given us 66 books of Revelation, and he's given us how to live our lives. And if we're seeking to understand his revealed will, then we'll be able to make our choices. That's why we're looking at the book of Proverbs together in evening services. It gives us the principles to be able to live our lives within the revealed will of God. We ask ourselves, how well do we know God's revealed will? When we want guidance, what do I do here? Well, how well do we know God's words in his revealed will? But the calamity of Lot gets worse. He's failing to seek God, failing to seek God's will. But isn't there too a failure to seek God's people? Verse 7 underlines the context of the strife between the herdsmen of Abraham's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. It says, at that time the Canaanites and the Perizzites were dwelling in the land. There's those at Sodom who are, verse 13, wicked, great sinners. Not just sinners, great sinners against the Lord. Do we hear Lot saying, "Abraham, think how badly it went when we went down to Egypt. We were there amongst the enemies of God. Look what happened. It was a disaster, Abraham. I'm so glad that we're back in the promised land. You brought us out, Abraham. Abraham, can I stay with you? I don't know any other believers, Abraham. How can you tell me to separate from you? I've got to be with a believer. You're the only one there. You and Sarai, I need you. Don't separate. I know our herdsmen are falling out. Can we not work out a way around this? Can we not work this through together?" Does Lot say that? Is that Lot's thinking? It's not. He's not seeking God's people. And we today, in a day when we're living with a godless nation in the main, in our land, it's basically the Canaanites and Perizzites are running it, do we not need God's people desperately? And so when we're seeking the next step in our lives, we should be saying, am I close to God's people? Not just, "Oh, there might be a church there. I'm sure there'll be a kind of church in the area." Is there a solid, faithful, Bible-teaching church in the area where the people love God and are 100% all out for him? I can't afford anything less because the Canaanites and Perizzites are in the land. Have we got that intensity of fervour in us to be with God's people? Again, those of you who are older, will have witnessed, I can think of one sad example of someone who just moved away. And I said to him, "You're going to starve spiritually." And he was quite shocked. I'd never ever talked to him anything vaguely to that strength before. But I was worried, because however strong we are as a believer, if we go into a spiritual desert, we're going to follow the path of Lot. We might just about be saved, but we'll be in big trouble. Do we seek the people of God? But ultimately, what's the failure of Lot? The failure is the failure to put the spiritual above the physical and seek God's salvation. After all, what's Lot's greatest need? He needs the curse reversal. That's the promise he knows. He's been brought up to know that God's promised a seed of the woman to overcome the seed of the serpent. And now he's said, Abraham, it's in your seed. And he doesn't know when that's coming, does he? When we know, it took 2,000 years for the seed to come. Does Lot know that? He doesn't know if the seed to come could be the curse reverser. I mean, imagine if you were told, well, maybe when Abraham and Sarah have a child, that could be the Messiah. What would you be saying as Lot? You'd be saying, hey, Abraham, look, whatever. I need this curse reverser. I'm a sinner. I need to be saved. I want to be close to you, Abraham. I can't be away from you when Sarah has that baby that's been promised. Do we see Lot's clinging to Abraham and saying, Abraham, wherever you go, I will go. Your people be my people. Your God be my God. Far be it from me that anything but death parts you and me. Lot does not have that spiritual first, salvation first. And it's the catastrophe of Lot. It's the calamity of Lot. He should be thinking, I want to be as close as I can to the only out-and-out believer in God that I know in this land. And he's turned away. Why? Because he's just operating by sight. What looks good is what's making his decision. So that's one part of this chapter set out before us, walking by sight. That's Lot. Do you think, well, that's what we don't want to do? The Bible sets out sometimes examples. Don't do that. And then we look at the Abraham. Do this. Walking by faith. And what does faith bring? Well, the first thing that faith brings for Abraham is it brings him perspective. Calvin points out that faith perceives things which are hidden from men's view and reaches for future things which are not yet visible. And we really see that if we were to turn to Hebrews 11 and see what's going on in Abraham's mind. What's going on in Abraham's mind that makes him able to think differently? Hebrews 11 and verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise, for he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. So Abraham, in his eyes of faith, is looking forward to a city that he would never dwell in on earth, but is coming in the future. And you could say that Lot was shopping to make his home in this life look nice, but Abraham was shopping to make his home in the city which has foundations full of treasure. Because he knew that where his treasure was, there his heart would be also. So Abraham had that perspective. So we ask ourselves the question, when we're making decisions in this life, am I thinking, does that bring me treasure in heaven or does it bring me treasure on earth? Because where my treasure is, there my heart will be also. So faith brought Abraham perspective that he didn't just say, what do I see? He looked at what was coming. But faith also brought generosity. Now, you know, you sometimes have two children wanting to have a share of a bit of cake. And you have the proverbial idea, one cuts and the other chooses. So you have fair shares. But Abraham does far more than that, doesn't he? What does he say to Lot? Verse 8, he says, "Let there be no strife between you and me, between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. If you take the left hand, I'll go to the right. If you take the right hand, I will go to the left." Abraham has learned to trust God's provision. After all, if in Egypt, when he was faithless towards God, God blessed him with abounding herds, can Abraham not trust God in the land? He's starting to exercise that spiritual muscle. God's brought him through a hard time, so that when he's now in this time, and he could be tempted himself, "Oh, the Jordan Valley looks quite nice. Hey, sorry, Lot, you stay up at Bethel in the mountains, I'm going down. Bye, Lot." No. He's exercising the spiritual muscle. Faith brings generosity. Because the man, one commentator said, sure of God can hold very lightly to the things of this world. A man or woman sure of God can hold very lightly to the things of this world. You see, Abraham might have possessed great flocks, but Lot's great flocks possessed him. That's what he was interested in. And so this encourages us. We don't have to scheme to work things out. We don't have to be grasping. Faith can bring this generosity. But strikingly here, faith does bring separation. You see, the life of faith is an all-in from a spiritual perspective. And what has Abraham, or Abraham at this stage, found within his group? He's found that there's been a time of blessing, hasn't it? Spiritual blessing, God revealing himself to Abraham. A time of spiritual blessing when they've moved out halfway obedience and they've moved into the land. They've gone to Egypt and they've been brought back. There's been a time of spiritual blessing, and Lot's been on the edges of that spiritual blessing. But what's he liable to do? Well, to lower the spiritual temperature, to tempt Abraham to worldly policy and worldly methods. That's what Lot is doing. Abraham says, separate. It's very striking. He doesn't want to be in close association with someone walking by sight like Lot. I was asked recently about our music in church, and I had to say, "We don't have a band." I said, "Oh, we don't have a band." They said, "Well, one advantage in this context of not having a band is it can attract people who love music more than loving God." And you can see, not always, but too often, that people can be attracted for the wrong reasons. You can have people in church who want something that church gives, the blessing, but they want the blessing more than they want God. Now, what could Abraham have thought? He could have thought the Canaanites and Perizzites are in the land. I mean, we believers have got to stick together. Wouldn't that be a strong argument? Not many believers in the land, are there? There's Abraham, there's Sarai, there's probably some of Abraham's servants like Eliezer of Damascus. There's some believers and there's Lot. Abraham could say, "Well, there's no way we can divide here." And people today use the argument, "Well, there's too few Christians to divide. Let's not have any hard and fast lines. Let's not have any high standards. Let's just kind of come to a kind of a whatever we can agree with, lowest common denominator, big tent, let's get everybody in." No, that's not what Abraham does. There is a separation going on here because Abraham is a man of faith who is separated from the man of sight. There's a massive danger of those who basically escape destruction with nothing more than their soul's salvation. What's the big division that we've often talked about? The choice we think is between heaven and hell. No, it's not. Not ultimately. Anyone, if you say, "Do you want to go to heaven or hell?" will say, "Heaven." The choice is between heaven and earth. People who want this life, and that's where their focus is. That's Lot. And close fellowship over a long period with such people is impossible without damage to our spiritual health. So looking at this passage, there is a clear situation where Abraham is commended for this separation. Faith brings separation. And faith brings, we say the commendation, faith brings reward. Faith brings reward. What did Lot do? Lot took, didn't he? Took the chance, he saw, and he took. But what about Abraham? Abraham had that generosity and God gave to him. Look at verse 14. The Lord said to Abraham, after Lot had separated from him, lift up your eyes. Here's the eyes now, but this is God saying, look. Northward, southward, eastward and westward, that includes the Jordan Valley. For all the land that you see, I will give to you and your offspring forever. I'll make your offspring as the dust of the earth, so that if one can count the dust of the earth, your offspring can also be counted. Arise, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I will give it to you. What do we have from Abraham? We have more personal revelation. Imagine if Lot had just stayed around. Said to Abraham, I definitely need to stay with you. And God's revealed himself to Abraham. Lot would have had all of this extra encouragement. He's missed out. Abraham's rewarded. And the land promise that God's already made is confirmed. Verse 15, all the land that you see, I will give to you and your offspring forever. And God invites Abraham to do what Enoch did. The word is the same in verse 17. To walk with him. This idea of walking through. Saying, come on, Abraham, walk with me. I'm with you. And so what does Abraham do? Abraham says, you're with me. I'll move on northwards, settled by the oaks of Mamre, which are at Hebron. And there he did what? He built an altar to the Lord. Plenty of land. Abraham up at Hebron. Lot could have been back at Bethel. No problem. He's seeking God. Faith has brought the reward to Abraham. We now see Abraham as a man of faith, exercising his spiritual muscle. And as he steps out in faith, so he is rewarded. Well, you could say, as someone described this to me recently, that we are, in a sense, in the Christian faith, constantly in the situation of being at Bethel. Where was Bethel? You know, you're up in the hills. And you know when you're up in the hills, when you're at the bottom of a mountain, you think, oh, I'll climb that mountain, and you set off up. And you go up and you say, there's the top. You climb up, you get there, and then you're like, oh, now that wasn't the top. That's the top. Okay, I'll climb up that. And you get there, and you think, oh, no, that wasn't the top either. And that's the top. And even when you get to the top, you see, oh, it's kind of the top, but then it kind of goes down to the real top. And you're constantly scrambling up and scrambling down, and on you go, narrow paths, over the rocks, pulling yourself up on your hands. And the Christian life is a constant series. It's not just one fork in the road, it's constant forks in the road. It's like we're here with Abraham, and there's two choices. Are we going to choose the high paths on the high grounds, the ups and downs of being up in the mountains in Bethel, or are we going to go that nice, gentle route down, nice mossy path down to the plains? And what we like to think as believers is we only have to make that decision once. And I'd be convinced that those of you who are believers today, you can look back in times in your life and you say, I was clearly given this choice. The hard path and the easy path. I chose the hard path and God's blessed me. And maybe you can tell me you've done that again and again. If you talk to an older believer, you're like, why does God keep making you do that? You just keep coming to more forks and you just think, maybe just one of these times, can I not just go down the mossy path? That's what the devil says, isn't it? Just this once. You've done quite well. But there's this constant fork in the road. And you've got this tough scramble on and the need to exercise faith. And we've got two choices. Again, it's what one person said about Lot. You may think you are different from Lot. But if you've put your job ahead of your family's spiritual life, if you've put your social advancement ahead of proper association with God's people, if you've let your choice of a home keep you from a church in which you can grow in faith and worship, you have moved from the highlands to the plain of the Jordan. I know you will say that you can serve God there as well as at Bethel. Lot would have said, I'm as eager as you are to serve the Lord. After all, the cities of the plain need witnesses too. True, they did. But Lot's heart was not in witnessing. He was doing nothing for God. His heart was set on his possessions, sophistication and glamour. And for that, he lost everything. That's Lot. And we're to picture ourselves, when we have the devil whispering ourselves, says, go down. We're to say, that's what happened to Lot. But look what happened to Abraham as he was learning to choose the upward path. Look at how God rewarded him. The whole land. Personal revelation. Walking with him. A life with God. And we're to see Abraham at the end of this passage walking through the land with God and say, where would I rather be than with Abraham? Up, down, and up, and down. That's the route we're to imagine for our Christian lives. Whereas constantly the devil says, just once. Come on, follow what you see. And Abraham, how was he able to do it? Because he looked and saw the city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. And isn't it a joy to be in the church of Jesus Christ and to be in a local congregation of Jesus Christ with people who've made those decisions in the past? And they can testify personally today that God's blessed them through it. If we're younger, we should talk to those who are older, that we might have the strength to go on knowing that God bless them, and he'll bless us if we follow the path of Abraham, walking by faith and not by sight. Amen.